Hello, and welcome to the Not Quite Hollywood podcast, where we talk about film and film things. My name is August.
I'm Jamie.
And I'm John.
Alrighty, so we're going to start off with the movies that we watched this week, and we'll lead into the communal movie, Hard to Be a God, that we watched. So, Jamie, what film did you watch recently?
It's funny. I just made the stupid segue. But Hard to Be a God, it's a, you know, it's similar in terms of the aliens trying to take over a planet. we'll get to that movie later, but
it's,
yeah.
It's the only connection.
That's it. Shot in black and white.
Yeah.
It's an indie film from Russia. Independence Day.
Oh, yes.
See? A lot of ties, actually.
Now, just for the sake of those who are well-versed in Russian film, I mean, there may be an actual Independence Day Russian film, so...
True.
Which one is this? Is this the Russian one, or is this the American one?
This is the 1996 American blockbuster, Independence Day, okay. Starring Will Smith, Jeff Goldblum, and Bill Pullman.
Okay, you had me excited.
Sorry. That one
but
has a different
now
title.
That it's just Independence Day,
yes.
I'm not excited.
So... Independence Day, as you all are well aware of, I'm sure, is a sci-fi film where aliens come and fuck shit up. And I watched it recently for my vlog, and it's about 20 years now since it came out. Of course, they're making that sequel.
Jesus.
Starring Bill Pullman's beard.
Oh my god, that beard needs a fucking zip code.
Hey, at least they got Jeff Goldblum back.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Will Smith died in a crash off-screen between the films.
he made a very smart business move.
Do you mind if we write you out by killing you off-screen?
He was probably like, okay.
Was he offended by that?
No, I think because the initial... They were going to do two sequels, right? Like, film back-to-back. And then Will Smith wanted $50 million for both of them. So they're like, nah, fuck it. And they just rewrote it and made another one without him.
So wait, we're going to have two?
They were going to.
Oh, okay.
They were going to film them at the same time, back to back, and then save money from production. But Will Smith's like, I want $50 million.
Filming two movies at once? Shit.
I don't think they'd pay you $50 million.
But when did he make this decision? Was that,
back? 3 years ago.
3 years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
Before. I would be like, come on, you're not so hot anymore.
Well, no.
50 million.
No. Well, that was a year after Earth came out, so no, not at all.
And I want my son in it.
No, yeah, probably would have.
Weirdest fucking person ever. No offense.
And his daughter would have done, like, this song for the movie.
My tendrils back and forth. I don't know. It's
you know, I whip my hair back and forth, the tendrils. Yeah. This Independence Day.
The original.
The original. Yes. How is it going back to it? Is it...
So the 90s are notorious for having fucking terrible special effects, right?
Yeah.
For video games, movies, name it. Because of their budget constraints, they only had a budget of, back then, even then it was not much, $75 million. So to make a blockbuster sci-fi film, they had $75
million.
Yeah. I'm sure this new one's going to be $200 million. Sure, at least, right?
Jesus.
I mean, the Marvel movies are at 225, 250 now.
But nowadays, you can't even do much with 200 million, right?
Well,
depends on how great you want it to look.
I mean, the problem is, nowadays, we're so beholden to special effects, like CGI, that you don't have much of a choice anymore. Like, Independence Day, what I love about it is they use practical effects, CGI, but more importantly, they have a lot of miniatures. All of the destruction is all miniatures in, like, these small little towns, like, probably the size of, like, a warehouse.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a good 35 feet, whatever, and they have, like, this whole city, and they blow it up.
Yeah.
And they had to do it properly one time. But they saved a lot of money that way. Like, it looks pretty cool. And then they just digitally matte paint the alien ship on top of it. Done. Like, I love that kind of stuff. Miniatures are never used anymore.
I know. It needs to come back. What's the last film that you can think of? Recent film.
Grand Budapest Hotel.
Did they?
Yeah.
Nice.
All right.
The big shot of the hotel from outside. Yep. All miniature. And I think even the down the ski race, downhill ski race.
Nice.
I think that was kind of had a little bit of miniature work to it as well.
It's so frustrating. We can't get over that. It drives me nuts. Always.
We always go back to CGI and why we don't want it.
Yeah. So fuck off, CGI. We're going to make a film with puppets.
Good luck.
And miniatures and stick figures.
And lots of real fire.
Yes, real a lot fire. Of fire.
Real explosions.
We're going to just buy like 35 gallons of gasoline and call it good.
Watch the plastic just burn off. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's people's human flesh melting off.
There's $200 million of gasoline.
Yeah, that's a lot of gas.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say about Independence Day. We've all seen it. I mean, when's the last time you guys seen it?
The film. It's got to be years ago.
Yeah, many
years. I think I've only seen it twice. I saw it in the theater when it came out, and probably 3 or 4 years later, I watched it and hadn't seen it since.
Okay.
Although, I mean, there's so much references to it that you pretty much remember everything about it.
I think the last time I watched it was like VHS days.
Yep.
So that's a really long time ago.
At most 2 years after the release of it. But
yeah.
You know, we talked about long gestating sequels a couple episodes back, and we talked about, you know, the blockbuster aspect of film going, but
well, I'm glad you bring that up, because really thinking about Independence Day, I don't feel like a sequel is warranted for it. Because, for a 90s action film back then, it was pretty good. It was really entertaining. But really, I think back on it now, I don't know if I could really sit through it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably just be kind of bored.
It's so hard to, like, I always do these blog posts, right? Like, looking at my old movies as growing up as a kid, and it's so hard to separate nostalgia from entertainment. Like, which is which, and then where does that line blur? You know, and I like the 90s action more than most of today's action, because today's action is mostly CGI, and it's annoying.
I've heard, too, like, a good example, and I still love this movie, was The Rock with Nick Cage and Sean Connery. It's one of my favorite action movies ever. And I try to watch action movies now, and I just can't. It just doesn't feel right.
There's a certain je ne sais quoi. There's something missing. We don't really can't really elaborate on that.
Jenny who?
Je ne sais quoi. It means I don't know.
She's French, right?
Yep.
I knew her back in the day.
That French whore. French
whore. Stop trying to classy this podcast up.
Yeah, you're throwing around these really complicated terms around me, and I'm sorry, I can't handle it.
The hipster can't handle
it. Hey, August, voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir?
I'm not the
third. Are you coming on to me?
No. Yes. Do you know what that means?
It means Christina Aguilera and a bunch of other women. Wow,
doesn't even know the original. Oh, we have a French advantage, John.
We have a French advantage.
Fantastic. I have a Midwestern advantage, okay?
Yep.
But to be fair, I only know nonsense words and swear words in French. I don't know anything else beyond that.
Pretty much.
I was trying to think of a cuss word that I know to associate with Independence Day. Scheiße.
Yeah, there you go.
I like the alien design.
Yeah.
In Independence Day. Yep. It is really interesting. Especially when you like find out that that's just like an exoskeleton and there's a different alien inside.
I think
Mothership.
Yeah. That was pretty standard.
Like Mothership. Well, yeah. It's been a while, but how did they figure out where they needed to go?
The ship. I don't know. That's kind of a plot hole there.
What do you mean?
Like
where the mothership is? I mean, they have coordinates based on where it is. I mean, NASA can see it.
Well, I mean, like, fucking the control room. I guess they were kind of, like, sent there to the control room, right?
Yeah, well, they wrote it out of the script easy. Yeah, as soon as they get close enough, they lock in. and it goes to the main control room. So that's a kind of a cheat, but
how did they not have like some kind of bioscan technology where they're able to be like, hey, you know what? There might not be our kind of people in that ship.
That's why they put the shield up. I don't know. They don't. Yeah, they have like a bay door that could close in front, so you couldn't see who was piloting it. Oh. They wrote everything out of the script, but
that was the point I was going to bring up with this movie. Is I like the concept of it. It was the first movie I saw where, with the ships hovering over the cities, I had that sense of scale.
Yeah,
I was just like, holy crap, these things are huge. The only problem I had were the dumb things in there that were written in, like uploading the virus from a MacBook, whatever they had at the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Things like that, little stupid things that were just could have probably came up with something better.
Well, how did they connect with the ship?
That's the thing. Yeah.
Like they didn't have Wi-Fi back then, so
to just upload it in. Yeah, to upload your computer your USB drive on your USB ship. USB
drive on your standard alien spaceship.
So then 1.0. How does that alien ship connect with the mothership?
USB technology was not that good back then anyway. So.
Well, yeah, that's another thing. You think about like computer technology from the 90s to now, and then you're like, there's no way.
And they had a 1,000-year advantage on us, whatever it ends up being. That's pretty not good. It's like trying to throw a freaking floppy disk into like a solid-state drive.
Dude. In Independence Day Resurgence,
yeah.
I hope they bring down the aliens via Bluetooth.
They have to be like 30 feet from
them. Anonymous hacks them.
Shut them down. No, they Twitter them. They just fucking Twitter them right out of the fucking sky.
There's a bunch of posts on 4chan.
These alien bastards are trying to take over the planet. Let's fuck with them.
It hacks the alien Twitter profile and puts gay porn on it.
Anonymous will take them down. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay, so
bunch of people in Guy Fox masks.
Guy Fox.
Yeah, that's what it is. So you guys,
LOL, epic hacks.
This ship just explodes.
Hashtag epic fail.
These memes are too dank. Oh Jesus! The sad part is they probably would put that in there.
Now I'm scared. That's what's actually going to be in there.
And Morgan Freeman at the end, like, one weakness was memes. What? No.
Zuckerberg, we need your help. Social media, these things out of the fucking sky.
No, that's how they're able to like hack into their computers or whatever is by tracing the aliens through Facebook.
Yeah, they have profiles. They have a Facebook account.
Yeah, well, so I like the I'm liking the additional material they're building around the sequel. So like sequels usually don't have like a lot of lore, but they built this 20-year like lore to set up this movie. Like they've been using their alien technology to further advance our personal devices as well as, defense force. And, like, you know, all the ships are hover ships now. All the Air Force jets are super awesome and souped up. And then, like, they said that in the lore, I looked it up today, alien technology was for the cause for touchscreen cell phones, airport scanners, and a couple other things. Like, we learned from them and built this world and... And then, of course, in there, Will Smith dies. But I like that kind of, like, lore. And, like, the 20 years makes sense in that kind of way. Like, it's like that anime, Robotech, which I have not seen yet.
Robotech? Which one? Isn't there a bunch of them?
First one. Yeah, the one with, like, the alien ship lands, and they don't know what they learn from it, and the next generation of people have to deal with them coming back to get their ship or something like that. It's like the ripping off Robotech, essentially.
But your point being, like, I remember after watching Independence Day going, well, what happens when all the rest of them show up after we destroyed these ones?
Right.
And see, actually, I honestly assumed that was it. Like, that was the whole entire alien race, and they just...
It never is, August.
It never is. There's always
there's more. Always more. There's always more money to be made.
Yeah. Search for more money.
Well, I mean, if you think about that logic, it's like, all right... You have Earth, where it's, they don't have a lot of like I guess, as advanced technology as your alien race, they're going to be kind of a little bit of a pushover. Why not kind of send even more? But then again, being like, oh, this is just going to be an easy takeover, so
well,
maybe not go full force.
I believe in what Elon Musk says, that we have to get off of Earth eventually. Our species.
Well, I mean, but then we're going to be on a different planet. We're not going to be as well established and have as great as defense, so it'll just be even easier.
It'll be like that other movie we maybe watch.
Well, oh. we gotta go into Type 3 civilization. That's a Japanese astrophysicist, Mikai.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, his name. Like, Type 1 is, like, we are able to sustain ourselves without any fossil fuels. Type 2 is we've colonize different planets. Type 3 is where we live completely independent of a planet. We just live in ships. Or at least two, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing. He's like, we're type 0.
Yeah.
It's
like,
great.
Type 0.0003 repeating, something like that.
But what I wanted to ask earlier, so you grew up liking it, and now you're looking at it with, you know, 2020.
Yeah.
It's not as a good movie.
Yeah.
What initially changed for you? Like, when you watched it probably a couple years after, at that point,
yeah,
on VHS, what changed? Like, did you just start picking up, like, all the shitty dialogue, plot holes, and that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, the plot holes. I feel like it's kind of a slower paced movie to be like an action blockbuster, because you have the first attack, and then like the ships and fighting and the jets, and then you like just chill out at a base for a really long time, practically for the majority of the movie, and then the final battle, which is in really it. Well, I guess there's that final battle with Bill Pullman and
Randy Quaid
putting the president in a damn jet and having him fight.
When, by the way, all of his cabinet and everybody else died. So, I don't know who the hell would be president at that point, like the senator from Maine. I mean, they killed the entire Joint Chiefs and all the hierarchy of succession.
Wouldn't you, like, always want to just, like, be like, Mr. President, I know you want to go fight for the people, but maybe it's the best idea that you just chill out here at the base.
Fuck it, I'm going
out. That's not Pullman style.
Yeah.
He's an ass-kicking.
The thing is, what does Pullman do in that battle?
He helps take down the... I mean, he guides the way for Randy Quaid to destroy the ship.
Well, I was going
to
say, Randy Quaid's the one who destroys
it. Well, he kills himself, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he kills himself in Korea.
Sadly, do you think in real life, he's almost there?
Yeah.
But do you think Randy Quaid could have done that with several other pilots that are actually more skilled than Bill Pullman?
Well, I mean, his background was... I mean, we're going crazy, but his background was he was a fighter pilot in the Air Force. And then he became president over years.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, I was born to fly or something. Like, he's talking to the general. It's so fucking cheesy.
He's drunk.
Yeah.
I didn't fly.
Like, I'm gonna go.
I never realized that he was a pilot. They just passed by me in the dialogue. Okay, another thing, a kind of a plot hole, is how does the president's wife survive?
She shouldn't have. She crashed in a helicopter.
To move the plot.
Yeah,
like that's because it's the same helicopter that's in front of the White House, gets engulfed in flames and completely blows up, kills everyone else. Probably it kills the pilot and probably several other military personnel that are covered in Kevlar, bulletproof vests, have helmets on. They get obliterated, yet she's okay.
Yeah, like John said, plot moved along.
Why weren't they quicker at destroying everything?
Why weren't they? Or
yeah,
what do you mean? Oh, them?
Yeah, they do. The aliens do like their initial attack. I mean, really, you think they would be smart enough to be like, "Oh, we're gonna go attack the major cities."
They did.
But we're just, you know, I mean, what I'm saying is they're this smart that they're going to attack all the major cities and not go after the military bases first.
Yeah, this is obviously a race of beings that have done this before to other planets. So they must have met resistance in other planets and would have been prepared
Fuck up the military.
For what's going to happen. And not make your most vulnerable part of your ship wide open Yeah. That well, after the shields go down, that you can just get in there.
Theoretically, they're like, there's no virus that can stop our shields.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Some old Mac PC bullshit from 1995.
Dawson, go in there.
Windows 95 took us down. What's funny,
That's, it just serves a spectacle of watching, oh my gosh, you know, that's Paris, that's Moscow, that's Washington, D.C., that's New York getting blown up. I got to see the spectacle. These aliens are fucking idiots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Took our population down pretty good, though. Just saying.
We needed that.
Not of the ones that are capable of destroying them.
In this fictional world, they're all right. They'll come out of it all right, hopefully.
Mediocre. Well, that's what I'd like to see in the sequels. And they're like, you know what? Maybe we should go after the bases first. And Bill Pullman, like, directly target him on the world and just fucking one shot.
Crazy beer?
Crazy
beer is going down.
He's not even president anymore.
Long distance away. Who cares? He helped Randy Quaid destroy one of their ships, so you know what?
He's three presidents ago in this movie.
Now from the trailer, he's just like
crazy fucking
like a, he's being secured.
Ever since they went in his mind, he still has like dreams of them. He can still see them. No, it's great, really great screenwriting. But that's the kind of thing, like you were saying this earlier about how this felt slow, because in Emmerich's style, you know, Godzilla, Day After Tomorrow, 2012, you follow a lot of people as they interact with this event, right? So that can really slow things down. I mean, one of his best movies, honestly, I think we can all agree, is The Patriot. We forget it's him because it's not his kind of film. That was a pretty good movie. It was like, you know, Mel Gibson, Heath Ledger, and all that stuff.
Here's the thing about Emmerich.
Here we go.
The only thing Emmerich needs to do in a movie is this. Destroy stuff.
Yeah.
So he needs to like co-direct a movie with someone.
Michael Bay.
No, not Michael Bay. Someone who can actually, you know, construct a really good story and, you know, do non-action scenes that don't look like soap opera.
So you're saying he has to also have a co-writer who can do co-writer
as well, yeah. Someone who can actually write great dialogue. I mean, that's the thing. It's just like about, you know, Independence Day and how it's changed for me is that I like a little bit of story to, you know, a good story to drag along from the action, one action piece to the next action piece.
Sure.
And with that movie, I don't really see much of it.
And that, you know, it's not meant to, I don't think. That's what Emmerich's style is. For the most part, he's just there to blow shit up and entertain you for like a couple hours.
Yeah.
Sometimes longer.
You're talking about like 2012 or whatever?
I don't know. I didn't watch that one. I didn't bother.
Godzilla. Oh, God. That is one of the movies I regret loving as a child.
See, yeah, I have a sad...
I hated it from the beginning.
You were luckily a little older. You got to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
When it turned into Jurassic Park with the raptors and shit, I was like, what the...
Oh, the mini Godzillas?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Add in a segue. Spoiler, segue. This is a segue.
Before my movie pick this week, I was in the theater, and the trailer for the sequel to Independence Day was there. And I'm still not 100% convinced. I'm curious about it, but...
Nope.
So, there might be hope, Jamie. But anyway, I saw one that I was really excited for, The Conjuring 2. Directed by James Wan.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to see it in a completely empty theater.
Oh, nice.
Which made it even more creepy. Because I was sitting there like, other people are going to show up, right? Like, any minute, right? And then the lights started dimming. I was like, oh, fuck me. Like, if I hear or see anything in this theater, I know it's not another person. But,
Red.
Oh, God. It's The Conjuring that's in there.
It's The Conjuring.
You all of a sudden you see like two old people like in period piece clothing walk in. They're speaking backwards.
Yeah, and I'm just I hope this is a promotional stunt.
In Orno, Maine.
In Orno with one person in the theater.
So well, yes. Yeah, they probably could have done that and done like.
I know, it would have been the promotional shit.
That was so fucking good.
I watched this guy die on camera.
Like what they did with Carrie or whatever, about in the. Doing that elaborate setup of. The girl going crazy smell. And like
moving like
the
those.
Tables. And I felt like this would have been something that would have been better because it would have been one person.
It would have just been me sitting there with a thing of popcorn, scratching my nuts, and then all of a sudden, fucking.
Something drops from
your. Really, you know, fuck.
If we ever make a movie, we should do that. Just random theaters throughout the country, like the same like weekend. Just start fucking with people. Or during the week, actually.
Like
weekdays showing. He's like, what the fuck is this person doing? And just like.
Run in with prop guns and
no, like no, Jesus, no. Like projectile vomit on somebody's shoes. If it's like a
Jesus,
yeah.
Have fun with that.
That's pretty specific.
Well, I mean, like I was continuing your fantasy with the two, or August's fantasy with the two old, like old timey clothes, and then you start speaking tongues. And
did someone vomit on you during Conjuring?
No, nobody did. I will speak about the movie now if we can. The movie is about the two real-life paranormal investigators from, let's say, 60s, 70s, 80s, probably.
Yeah. Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Okay.
Now, you can say whatever you want about them and the real things, events they investigated. They're probably all hoaxes, whatever. But I think this is great. It's great material for a movie franchise because all these different crazy... you know, legends in the paranormal world can now be brought to the screen.
Oh, yeah.
And
they can say it's based on a true story.
And they can say it's based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some... I'm not a big fan of modern horror. I don't like the straight-up just jump factors or if it's, like, torture porn shit. Like, I wasn't a fan of Saw or any of that stuff.
Hostile.
Yeah. Hostile. I'm not... I don't find that stuff scary. It's just stupid and disturbing.
You didn't watch Paranormal Activity 10.
I don't watch Paranormal Activities either. I don't find those.
10th one,
Jamie?
I have a sore spot for those shitty movies.
What the hell?
That franchise. I'm like, I like how they pull them off.
Gosh.
God damn it.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. Just keep going, John.
No, hold on one sec.
No, we'll berate him later.
You can go, like, on the website and find some... website where people will stream their daily lives and you won't have to pay for it. Because that's all paranormal activity is. It's just...
Yeah, with occasional jump scare.
Yeah, watching these annoying-ass family through security cams.
No,
yeah.
I'm glad we brought it up because I can use it as an example.
Sure.
The first Conjuring you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you've seen the second one.
Yep.
The level of horror... for the supposed, like, ghost or poltergeist or whatever you want to say in those movies compared to, like, Paranormal Activity, you got to say it's much better in The Conjuring.
Oh.
They're so much more frightening.
Is that a question?
I'm
serious?
Asking you.
Of course they're more frightening.
Okay.
Like, they're way more well done. I mean, Paranormal Activity is low budget at its core, so it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
It's just, I have a stupid soft spot for it. I don't know why. I hate you guys. No, Conjuring is great.
How many of these have you watched?
There's like, what, six of them? All but the last one? And I didn't like the fourth or fifth one.
Oh.
You like
so you're welcome.
The second and third?
The third one was the better of the first three, I guess.
Okay, let's get off the topic of Paranormal Activity.
No more Paranormal Activity.
Conjuring 2.
Conjuring 2?
Conjuring 2.
Conjuring 2 features one of my favorite legends as far as, like, ghosts go. I say ghosts. I just say more demonic entities. And that's the Crooked Man. And he's got this awesome little, like, nursery rhyme that goes with him, and it's just this entity that's just, like, tall and gangly and all distorted and bent out, and he kind of just haunts children and shit, and, you know. So they focused on that one, and it was a case in England, Enfield, England, where a family's getting tormented by which they think is a ghost of an old man. But then turns out to be actually the Crooked Man using the persona of this old man to get to the kid, which I was fine with. I love that idea. I love that concept. But then it went down to another demonic entity.
The Crooked Man was another proxy too, though. Spoilers.
That's the thing. Spoilers, yes, spoilers. And that's what bugged me about this film. This is the only thing that really bugged me about it was I think the Crooked Man would have been awesome on his own. And then Valak, the demonic nun, which was following Ed and Lorraine around. If that thing would have just been on its own, and then Crooked Man on its own, I thought that would have been great. Because if it turns out that Valak, which it is, did the persona of the Crooked Man and the persona of the old man, then why did they have to go all the way to England? You know what I mean? If Valak was just trying to get to Ed and Lorraine, why stage something all the way over in England to make them go over there if it turns out it's just Valak the nun anyway? But because I thought it would have been awesome if they went there and there was the Crooked Man was his own entity and Valak was his own entity and they had a confrontation at some point during like the climax. Not like a straight up Jason versus Freddy thing, but some kind of like acknowledgement of each other, like two demonic entities competing. Yeah. Like one's competing for the family and one's competing for Ed and Lorraine Warren. I thought that would have been really great. But I felt that's the only part that kind of fumbled the ball. There was, because it didn't really make sense when you think about it. But
No,
not much at all.
Most movies don't.
No. But the atmosphere was amazing. The again, the time period, everything looked spot on.
Oh, 70s England.
70s England.
So cool.
All the houses had just, like, everywhere they lived, it was just, like, run down section of England. So all the houses had just texture and just mold and rust and everything. And their pipes didn't work properly. You know what I mean? It was just, they had this really feeling of being poor living in England in the 70s.
Yep.
I have a question about the Crooked Man, actually. Yes. And just, like, understanding this ghost even more. The family that he was haunting, like, did he... how to put it? Did he ever try to sell them a mediocre product at a really high price? Because that seems kind of crooked.
Oh, Jesus.
Gosh. Okay, I guess that was... Wow.
You give me shit for being dumb about movies. Shitty jokes.
That would be a pretty funny parody, though.
Sure.
That's how he entered their life, is he comes up.
A shitty car.
Oh, hey, you want this vacuum? It works really great.
This watch.
This watch.
Encyclopedia Satanica.
It's not out of my bedroom. What did you think, Jamie, though, of The Conjuring 2?
Well, we talked about it before off recording, but it really did a great job at playing with the audience's expectations of a horror film like this. Like, you were expecting a jump scare to come into play, and then, like, no, they pull back and don't do anything. Or they jump you or scare you in a different way. Like, they throw you off at every turn, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's not, because I'm not a big fan of just, like, the pop-out jump scares, but the way they did it in this one was very clever, because it was always when you didn't expect it. When you would expect it, it wouldn't happen.
Okay. Yeah.
But you reminded me of something I wanted to talk about, was the whole idea that Ed and Lorraine Warren in real life have been, you know, criticized for, they say everything they did was a hoax, you know, they just, all the evidence was fake, all this stuff. They actually incorporated that into the movie. So there's a point in the movie where you actually start to think, wait a minute, is this whole thing a hoax, just a clever hoax pulled off by this family? And you almost believe that it was.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
So yes, I'm a huge fan of The Conjuring 2. Go see it. Alone in the theater.
Is it going to be a Conjuring 3?
Oh, most likely.
Probably.
A Conjuring cinematic universe?
What, you mix in with Insidious all of a sudden? That's his other franchise.
Insidious?
Which he doesn't do anymore.
Yeah.
Now it's Lee Winnell and... Never mind.
Wasn't Patrick Wilson in
Insidious?
Yeah. That's his go-to guy, right?
Pretty much,
I like Patrick Wilson.
He's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
The Owl. The Night Owl.
Oh, right? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Patrick Wilson, yeah.
Little Children.
We're gonna get like.
I don't know. You're gonna explanation.
I haven't watched it yet.
What? It's a movie.
Yeah, Kate Winslet, whereas like she cheats on him or something like that. I don't know. I haven't watched it yet. Heard it was good. He's in it.
Okay,
that's it.
Little Children. I thought you want to talk about Little Children or something.
Not today.
Not today. You want to talk about Little Children some other day?
Every other night.
Ooh, I'm glad you're editing this one.
So, August, do you have any interest in seeing Conjuring 2 or any of them? I have the original if you want to watch it.
Nope.
Okay. You don't want to watch it at all?
No.
Okay, because that might be a community pick then.
Okay, just keep in mind.
Okay, yeah. All right. Go ahead.
make Conjuring a community pick, I don't care. I'll watch it.
Right alongside Pitch Perfect 3, bitch.
I'm just...
advanced screening.
We're going to make Pitch Perfect 3.
Yeah, just to... just to watch it.
It'll be us 2 hours sitting in front of a glass trying to break it.
Pitch not so perfect.
Pitch not so perfect.
That's pretty much what it is.
Could we do a Marlon Wayans Brothers like parody called Pitch Not So Perfect?
It's probably he heard us. He's like, I'm on that already.
He's already got the rights. He has the script.
He's got a right to like every like pun and every thing you can do with it.
Wrote the script in 5 minutes.
He's calling up like
copy paste
Vanilla Ice and like all these other B or like 90s nostalgic
D-list stars.
Yeah.
F.
D-list stars and musicians. Mm.
What's Fred Durst doing? Can he be my foe?
Oh, yeah.
Dying slowly.
That'd be nice.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. Some of us just have a head start.
This is our existential crisis part of the podcast.
Well, I feel like the existential crisis is going to really go right into our communal movie that we watched. Isn't it existential? Our communal movie was Hard to Be a God.
Hard to watch, Hard to Be a God.
Hard to watch. Okay, I'll just hold on 1 second. I'll intro it. And sure. That's the first thing I want to hear is what your guys' thoughts on it. Production for the movie started in 2000. It took 6 years to make because it was on and off because the director was having horrible health problems in and out of the hospital, so they'd have to stop. And it was released in 2013. And sadly, I think Aleksej German had passed away before his movie was released.
Unfortunately, he survived and finished the film.
So, as you can tell, John and Jamie hate me.
I'm being funny critical. I actually didn't hate the movie.
Okay, John has said that he doesn't hate me or hate this movie.
I haven't said a thing.
So, all right, guys. I want you guys to lay out what you feel about Hard to Be a God.
So, I wrote notes last night while watching it. I put two titles. It should have been alternate titles for this film.
Actually, there are several alternate titles.
Yeah, two of which are Hard to Be a Good Movie and Chaotic Boredom.
Or just clusterfuck cross claustrophobia.
So the film, like John alluded to...
the story.
Okay, yeah, so... Yeah,
damn.
To my reference earlier, the...
I fucked that up.
It's okay. People fuck things up. We can make it work right now.
Or were you trying to say that Hard to Be a God was a fuck up?
No, I'm saying that... So the film follows scientists, I think 30 scientists, that went to another planet very similar to Earth.
Yes.
Only 800 years behind us.
Yeah. They were like in medieval
age. Yeah, but they never had a renaissance, which is really important.
Yep.
So they're like in squalor.
They haven't had their enlightenment period yet.
Like, yeah.
Not really any inventing, nothing like that. No guns.
Nope.
Swords, spears, crossbows. That's probably like the most advanced tech. And alcohol production.
Fuck you if you try to synthesize alcohol. They'll fucking take it away from you.
Oh, yeah? They took away all the art. They do not... I guess there is music, like instruments, but they are really just allocated to the aristocracy. They're the only ones that can use it.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone that they find that is a poet and does writing, they get plunged headfirst into a shithole.
Mm.
A literal shithole.
Way to go. So
now, tell me.
So there's a really cool idea there.
Yeah.
Not just the sci-fi setup, but the idea of, like, what's his name? I can't remember his name. Like, all the names kind of... together. The main character, who had a fucking badass voice.
Yeah.
Really good deep voice.
Muscular.
Is it Don almost. Something?
It's Don...
Abel? Abel?
No. Like. Anoshka or something like that?
No, I think it was an R or something.
Reba?
Reba McIntyre.
I think it was Don Reba.
No, that was... That's one thing I'll admit. This is a very hard movie to follow.
So, and just like even getting the characters' names. But anyways, we'll call him Don R.
He's God. He was the God.
Yeah.
Donner Party 2. So the Don, the main character you follow, there's such cool ideas with that, like the idea of like trying to keep these people down and...
Don Ramada.
Ramada, so, okay. Keep these people down and rule over them like gods. And but the film, fucking Christ, I hate you so much. Not only is because it's hard to follow, it's fucking 3 hours long. It's like he didn't have a script. And he's kind of just, or he had an outline, and he's like, I'm going to keep shooting for 6 fucking years.
No, I asked August, you left the room.
I was brushing my teeth.
Okay.
I was tired after that movie.
He was brushing his teeth, and I had asked August how much of this was just, like, just improv-y, just let them do what they want, just people walking in front of the camera, putting in, you had said that he meticulously
wrote
and orchestrated, composed all of it.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Why? So
that's the answer in itself.
But I mean, like, the same idea, the same message could have been translated or delivered in such a more succinct manner.
I know,
like 2 hours.
Why don't you give it to Michael Bay?
No, fuck that. I'm saying there's a lot of great things about this movie. It's just so hard to watch. I mean, what's...
Because it's alienating.
Well, sure.
Which it's meant to be. It's meant...
It makes you feel, first of all, like I said earlier, claustrophobic. It makes you feel claustrophobic because everything's tight shots. Everything's crowded. It doesn't look like there's any space between any of these actors.
Mm-hmm.
There's always stuff in front of the camera moving around. And it makes you feel like you don't have any space. You have no bubble, like personal bubble. You're just...
Yeah.
I get it. It makes you feel like you're part of that community. Yeah. And
also drunk. Like, it seems very intoxicating, just like the way people move, the way scenes move. I mean, that's what we could say about Don Ramada, our protagonist, is that, I mean, he's practically drunk all the time, and probably they allude to, oh, I don't drink anymore, I sniff. So they probably, like, you know, sniffing some kind of drug or, drug powder.
What was I gonna say?
We really don't have to worry about spoiling this movie at all because isn't anything to spoil.
There's theories, though, I'm gonna present.
Oh yeah.
Before I forget, the camera is essentially documentary style. Uh-huh. You're following along as day to day with this Don Ramada.
Yeah, Ramada.
Oh, man. Okay, and the camera, the way, I guess, if he meticulously made it this way, people are told to look in the camera and, like, as if you are immersed in this world. It's like a first-person shooter game. Mm-hmm. Most times that character is completely blank slate, so you can put yourself in there.
Well, it's like people jerk Deadpool's dick off because, you know, he breaks the fourth wall, where this breaking of the fourth wall isn't tied with any
one character. Because at first I thought maybe someone's documenting it.
Yeah.
And that's why they're looking at the camera or making faces at the camera, but it's not. It's the camera's not a character. The
character's you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the camera's you.
Well, there's like several times where Don Ramada will be like, you know, antagonistic towards you for the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of being like, you know, you saw me do something and you're probably judging me right now. And he's like, back off. Like, you don't know me. All right, so... That's your impression. John, what's your impression?
Okay, I'm not as on the extreme as Jamie as far as, like, hating the movie or hating watching it.
You are putting words in my mouth. I never
said
it.
You said, I don't hate August for making me watch it.
I hate August for making me watch it, but I don't necessarily hate the movie. I'll never fucking watch it again.
Yeah. The thing is, I might watch it again because there are elements in it that I really love as far as what I like in movies and writing and things like that. And that is the subtle references of science fiction or something even more than that, if it's like almost like a supernatural element. The character himself walks around. He always has this white shirt that he's either wearing it or he's draping it around himself or draping it over other people. And I'm kind of thinking, and I remember earlier on in the film, I'm like, why is he obsessed with this shirt? He seems to love this shirt.
Yeah.
Now, granted, when you're watching it, everything seems like it's medieval times. Mm-hmm. There's no technology or anything. That's what you think. Nope. There's one scene where he kind of has a shirt draped over himself, and one of the little street kids takes it and puts it on his shoulder and takes a blade and rubs the blade down the shirt, and it sparks the blade. Yeah. That was such to me a brilliant way of showing that there is science fiction in this, because that shirt is somehow probably impenetrable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? And this guy's built himself up as like a god.
Yeah.
So he has, I thought, he has technology that these other people don't have. Mm-hmm. And maybe he's such a glorious fighter on the battlefield because people can't hurt him. They can't stab through that shirt.
Well, see, I'm,
you know,
I'm glad that you brought that up about him being a glorious leader, or, you know, amazing warrior. He can't kill anyone. When these scientists are like put on this new planet, they have like, it's part of the order or whatever, that they cannot kill anyone. And so, like, he will, people will talk about, you know, oh, Don Ramada, you were like, he's actually supposed to be like a pagan god's like descendant or whatever.
Yeah.
And so that's why a lot of people like fear him. And they talk about like, he killed like so many, like 250 people. Yeah. But the only thing there were ears, and we never saw the bodies. And he's like, well, you know, there's a good reason for that. And so that's why he's built up this mythos
around him. Well, he's a legend. He's a legend. Yeah. And even that one guy that accused him of being like
105,
or saying that the real person, according to my studies, he would be 105, and you're not 105. And at first I thought, oh, well, maybe he just took the persona of this character. But then we see later on, I'm like, no, I think this guy is actually...
He's been there.
He's that old. He's basically almost an immortal with technology that the other ones don't have.
Well, right after he said the 105, didn't he say like more like 40 plus 5 or something like that?
Well, yeah. Was, yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah, he's being like a joke.
And so, I thought it was kind of confirmed in what I interpreted as the last scene of the movie, where it looks like time has progressed quite a bit.
Yep.
And the clothes are a little more modern looking, and there's a little bit more technology in the scenes.
Yeah.
Not overdone.
And I want to
touch on like eyeglasses and things. Enough to be like, holy God, he's still alive. This looks like, I would say, 50, 60, 100 years down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I believe he really was this, that legendary character.
So I love this movie. It's one of my favorite movies that has come out recently, and this is my third time watching it, so I've devoted 9 hours to one movie. And Jamie, you don't like it. John, you're interested. You said that they're hard to watch,
hard to be a good,
boring chaos, but chaotic, there is board. One chaotic board. But there is one thing that I find really important about this film. Will you ever see a film like this ever again that is anything like it?
I think people have probably not based on watching this movie, but have attempted movies similar to this, whether they could pull them off or not.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this movie, as much as it was hard to watch, was pulled off properly.
Yeah.
You know.
And see, so to really go into, like, you know, Alesky German's son even said that the reason why he did it in black and white was because it had a documentary feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's where I feel like this movie can seem like it's very, very long. It's just because there's not a big overarching plot.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the plot that is there, you're just kind of lost and you don't really understand all that's going on.
The plot. I kind of pieced some of it together.
Yeah.
But it's not really, that's not really the important part, I think, of the movie.
It's more of just like a documentary of this world that is like ours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like showing what would have happened had we not had our own enlightenment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's basically, yeah.
Like, this is what society would be like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of ties in kind of like a little meta aspect to this movie, is that Alesky German, you know, Russian director, all of his previous films were banned from release for release by Soviet Russia government.
Yeah.
And so it'd be like he would have a movie, get it made, go to release it, and they would shut it down, and then like 2 or 3 years later they'd finally allow it to be viewed. So one of the key elements in this film is that they censor art.
Yeah.
So it's like Alesky German saying, this is what Russia is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they are censoring art. They're basically like really dogging on his homeland and just saying like, all of you are just obsessed with pooping and just backwards rundown people.
Did he ever spend time in a gulag for making these films?
Oh, that's Russian prison. Okay. Russian prison. I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
So earlier you said he couldn't kill, right? And then he does.
Mm-hmm.
In the back of the Blu-ray, it says they cannot interfere in the planet's political or historical development. By being there, they are doing that.
Yeah.
So they kind of came into the role on purpose, almost. Like, they just, like, got bored and, like, well, fuck it. Let's just start ruling the Earth. Or whatever this... Akinar.
Yeah, Akinar.
Is there some kind of history with Russian government in that regard? Like, some other entity came in and kind of just took over and became the government over time? I mean, I know this is not timely with, like, Ukraine, but that's essentially what happened to Ukraine.
Yeah.
I don't know the history of Russia much.
I don't know much about the history of Russia. Definitely would be an interesting thing to look into.
Yeah.
Because you could maybe say that Soviet Russia may have been that entity that came in.
Sure.
And started ruling everything. And another aspect is like when there becomes a dictatorship, one of the first things that they go after is destroying art.
Yeah.
Like that library that was in Egypt.
Alexandria.
Yeah. Destroying that when Hitler got hold of France or whatever, going through Louvière.
Yeah.
And then other things like that. So that's what I love about this movie, though, is like it's not a movie that to be watched. It's a film to be studied.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much just like working within it. And this is... being my third viewing, there are still things I am finding out about this. Not necessarily like plot points, but a few of the things have... one thing that I came to me last night when we watched it was delivery of information. Because there's a lot of scenes that you're just like thinking, what's the point of this scene? I don't know why I'm watching this. And one of them is there's these two guys are walking through like fog. And they're scared and they're holding up these wooden kind of like flag things. And they're just walking through and you're like, okay, apparently those guys are scared and they're holding that up for like protection for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, what, an hour and a half later, you find out that that's a summon to the Tower of Joy.
Mm.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, rather than just like, you know, being like any other movie of just being like, as soon as you see an object, it's going to be like, it's this.
Explain it, yeah.
And explain it. It's going to let you piece that.
I found those summon things funny because it's like, here, you've been summoned to the Tower of Joy, which is not joyful.
No.
Apparently, yeah, not.
It's like torture and guaranteed death, probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they give them to them, then they're like, oh, I have to go to the Tower of Joy. I'm like, fuck that, throw it away.
Run.
Like, see, and that's just like the way these people are.
Yeah. It's like, I guess I have to go.
Yeah. If they were viewing this as a statement of modern Russia, just being, you know, the mindless citizen, just being like, well, you think about, you get a citation or whatever, or they're saying you have to appear before a judge.
You've been summoned to court.
You have to go. You can't do that thing where it's just, oh, I'll just rip it up and not go.
Yeah.
You can, but you have to live off the grid at that point.
Exactly.
But...
I'll say that. I'll give it that. When you said about it being studied, like, if I was teaching, like, a film class, I would probably play this movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
For my students, just to be like, watch this and just to see, to get their impressions, you know, and discuss about this style of filmmaking.
And that's why I wanted you guys to watch it, because that's, it's not a movie that you like afterwards you're like, oh, you know, that was a pretty good movie, or that was a great movie. Yeah. It's just like, it's polarizing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can show it to someone, they're like, instantly, you can tell that, you know, they're not liking it. They're not going to like it. And then you talk with them afterwards, and then you start to see, like, the gears grind, and start to think about it. I'm not looking, you know, pointing directly at Jamie about this, but...
I'm not a fan of... I'm glad you showed us this film, but I'm not a fan of how you presented it, like it's fucking torture. And then, like, you're watching us with a little smirk in your goddamn face. Like, well, I can't wait to see them fucking cry and cringe and... Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are certain scenes that come up that is just like, they're so off the wall, and you're just like, what the hell is going on?
Didn't make another note.
That I was gonna smile. That I do smile. I'm just like, I wonder what they're gonna think about this.
So there's a lot of spitting, a lot of rubbing,
yes,
stuff in people's faces.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yep. Clearing their noses. They're just
snot.
Like,
oh, it's like fucking the most viscous I've ever seen snot in a film.
Probably real.
Probably. But they don't have, like, sinus infections. They need to go to a doctor.
Well, see, that's another thing. Is think about where they live.
They're sick, yeah.
They talk about how they, at this place of Arcanar, they are frequently subject to rain.
Yeah.
So it's always muddy, and it's always, you know, probably really hot. What is that? Humid.
Yeah.
It's probably very humid. You know, probably have a lot of, nasal problems. And, I mean, think about, you know, they live in squalor, so...
Yeah.
And that's another thing that I really like about it is that Aleksej German, he wanted to show medieval the way it was. He did not want to show a bunch of people in pristine white capes living in really nice, extravagant castles. I mean, people are like all about, you know, Game of Thrones. It really shows a gritty medieval, you know, fantasy world. And it's like... compare it here to Hard to Be a Goblin.
Well, that's something I forgot to bring up. The set designs, the costumes, everything looks amazing.
Fucking great.
All the actors are disgusting.
They're all, they all fit perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
It reminded me of like a Dark Souls game. If these guys could make like a Dark Souls game. Uh-huh. But I thought of Game of Thrones too. I said, Game of Thrones looks good, but not as good as this.
Like, yeah.
If these guys were hired to do Game of Thrones, it would be...
One of my favorite shots in the movie is like very claustrophobic shot, which is kind of hard to pick out from all the other shots, but when it's against his horse and you see the camera like pan along like the saddle of the horse, and you see his pants, you see his glove, you see all that detail,
the detail and textures and everything on it,
and I'm like, this just seems like Aleksej German's like, look at the amazing work that wardrobe design did. Because, I mean, it's so
whoever did that,
intricate.
Amazing. If there's, they should be still around. This isn't an old movie.
No.
So, hopefully they get a lot of work, because that was...
Oh, my God. It'd be amazing.
Those gauntlets alone are
the
fucking...
gauntlets
were
amazing.
Yeah, just... And set design was just... It looks so... It's run down.
Yeah.
Extremely run down, but... It just looks so real and like tangible that no CGI.
Yeah.
I mean, there is
it looks like
CGI,
a real place. It really exists.
That's my only gripe about the film, is that there are some CGI elements that are sprinkled throughout, and it's very jarring and it's kind of like weird and strange. And
did I miss these?
Yeah.
Which ones were that?
Yeah, which CGI?
There is... one scene where there's some kind of like CGI birds.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There's one where there's like a guy hanging up, or someone hanging upside down. You see like blood dripping.
Which
understand why. It's kind of like show that person's, you know, has blood coming out, and that's going to be hard to pick up. And then there's that scene that I still don't know, where he's tapping on the bells and you see like water droplets like appearing in front of him or beside him. Like, those are CGI, and
okay,
it doesn't look that great. But that's one of my gripes, and I mean, it's just very minor things.
Fuck CGI.
Yeah.
Every time.
But it seemed more stylized. Like, I don't mind CGI if it's done in a way that's... Because when I was seeing the birds, I knew they were fake, but it didn't look like they were trying to make them look real.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
See you, bird.
Yeah, okay, yeah, okay.
No, I don't know if those were the birds that were fake, but yeah. That's another thing that pops up. There's, like, these elements that pop up in the movie, and so, like, I haven't looked up what a see you bird is.
Tobacconist?
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
There's this one, his, like, I think main slave, like Muga or whatever. He's like, the tobacco is from the tobacco street, said, yeah. And you never really
that find was the that one out. Point, as far as my theory of it, him being well over 100 years old, was, I'd have to watch it again, but I could have swore there's a scene where he says, Muga, go to the tobacconist.
Yeah.
And the character looks younger, and then at the end scene, he says, Muga. And it's all of a sudden an old man with a beard.
Oh, shit. You're right.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, very...
Could be. I'd have to go back and see that first scene, though.
That's something I love about the end, is you'd spoke about it earlier, about how you could tell that there was a time change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just with these very subtle... Mm. things. Like, it's not going from, you know, horses and carriages to having, like, a car.
No, it was just enough. But they used the season change as a good, like, metaphor for it.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden it's winter, so you know time has passed. You immediately think time has passed. But
yep.
Basically, it was a lot of time has passed.
Yeah.
And like, he's bald and
yeah,
beardless.
And that's the thing, is, like, some other movie that would, you know, be like, well, I want to make sure that they get it. It'll pop up like a little date on the corner. Font. Yeah.
200 years later.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, listen.
And that's like the thing is, like, it doesn't matter how many years have passed. It's just that you understand that time has changed. They're in a new era.
Also,
and he's still alive.
His philosophy, too, made me think that he's older than what he appears. Because when all the other people are talking about going against the Greys and the Blacks and everything, and that they're going to overthrow them and start anew and everything, and he's constantly explaining to these people, there will always be another set of Blacks and another set of Greys and another rebellion, and there will always be that's not going to... And you think he's, you know, saying this out of philosophy, but I think he's saying it out of experience.
Yes.
That he's gone through this many times. It's just going to constantly happen.
So is his immortality based on that, like, drink he keeps drinking? There's something.
I'm not sure.
There's something they were missing. I think they were explaining. They were showing.
Yeah, there's other things too, like his constant, like that viscous blood that comes out of his nose all the time.
Yeah.
There's some like side effect to it or something.
Maybe,
I don't know.
There's one thing that I noticed, and I'm not sure if you guys notice, but when they're at the torture devices or whatever, and there's that blood. And he smears it all over.
Yeah.
Before then, if you pay attention to his face, like, it's diseased.
Yeah.
And, like, older. Like, there's a boil on his cheek.
Yeah.
But after that, they said whores and prostitutes. Because
when he would have the blood come out of his nose, it looked thick and black and viscous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was touching that stuff, it was the same. It seemed like the same thing, and he was rubbing it on his face. Almost like he was acknowledging they're killing people like me. That's what I felt like, whatever.
Okay.
I like to see where there's like everybody hung, and then he goes to them, like, he talks about the history of this person, like, this person was, I can remember the name was this person, you know, and like he felt bad, like they're all like gone. Like, even if he's doing this to prevent an overthrow of his reign, it still like hurts him to destroy intellectual people.
Well, it's because that's how he got there.
Mm-hmm.
To this new planet was through intellect.
Yeah. Well, you see it right from the start when he's introduced. He's playing like that jazz type thing.
And you see all his slaves, they put in earplugs.
Yeah, they
don't
want to hear it.
Yeah.
They're like, no, this is annoying.
Yeah.
One of them says that, I'm going to hang myself.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was cool.
Overall, I liked it. I enjoyed it, I'll admit it.
It's so many great scenes that pop up for me in that movie. Like, there's the one where they try to sell Don Ramada an eyeball, and then he like uncovers his hand. Don Ramada's like, no. So the guy comes up to the camera It's like this guy's trying to sell you an eyeball, basically. Like, it's freaking hilarious. You talk about like chaos, and that this was meticulously made. It's just like how he was able to replicate that chaos. Because really, when they're ever in like in interior scenes, there's a lot of people.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of freaking people in this movie, and it's just so tight, and you see them have to like walk around each other and like kind of the camera. I mean, there's cuts, but there's never like a whole lot of cuts.
There's a lot of long shots. That's where I get like the whole claustrophobia feeling. That's why I find it amazing that he choreographed all of it, because it doesn't look like it's choreographed. It looks like it's just random shit going on.
So there's a moment, it's kind of early in the film, where all the scientists, they group up and they're actually able to kind of like read poetry to each other. They talk about how they're Munchausen, and one guy, he like basically his persona is being Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah.
And they have like, they build a car that carries around just basically as a music stage for them to play on little guitars. But after that, we get a shot of one of the scientists, and I think it's raining, and he's like on the left side of the screen, and the right is just kind of like empty space, just like the background, and he's talking to Don Ramada, who's off screen. And then from the right, you see someone coming in with an umbrella, and they get up right in front of the camera, and they push the camera, like you see it having to move because it's just getting caught on this umbrella. And the shot that it ends up on as the umbrella person moves away is Don Ramada is now in the shot. Yeah. And I'm just like, that is just that's not a typical like shot, you know, movement or a pan that I've ever seen in any other movie. And I just love that interaction with the camera and just how unconventional it is. And just being like,
those types of things really do help immerse you into the film like that,
though. Yeah. I mean, just adds to that atmosphere. Closing statements. Hard to Be a God. Jamie, would, after talking about it and going a little bit more into it, would you be curious for another watch?
It's easier to be a good movie now, I think it's called. I knew I had to talk about it first, but I don't know if I'd ever watch it again just because of the length. The length really bugs me. It's a long fucking movie.
Yeah.
And, I mean, not, even movies have more conventional narratives or, you know, a progression in plot still are fucking annoying when they're that long. Especially, like, fantasy stuff. I'm not a big fan of fantasy or olden time stuff, so it's harder for me to watch that stuff at first.
Yeah.
But I'd probably be, like, researching this film more and trying to find more about it, and then maybe one day I will watch it again. But
yeah.
But it's cool. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on behind it. I might read the book, actually.
Yeah, I want to read the book, too. Mm. They also, the, can't remember the brothers who are the authors of that book, but they also wrote the book that Stalker is based off of as well.
The Strugatsky?
Strugatsky, yeah.
Yeah.
I know you're thinking like Boyhood, and that movie's 3 hours long. I was bored through that fucking movie.
Blue donkey dick.
But I mean, this, it had more interesting elements within it than Boyhood.
Mm-hmm.
John, closing statements?
My closing statements, had I known what the film was after I watched it, I might have enjoyed watching it the first time, if that makes any sense. Because now I want to watch again because I want to dissect it. I want to follow what the characters are doing, look at their movements, look at everything that's going on, because I like unraveling the mystery of what's not being told and what's going on. Like I said, what really pulled me into it was that scene with the kid when he scraped that shirt with the knife, and I was just like, whoa, this is something out of the ordinary here.
And see, that's what was interesting. It's a sci-fi film, but you don't see spaceships, you don't see space lasers, you don't see any technology.
So yeah, I'd probably watch again just to study it. It would probably last longer than 3 hours because I'd probably rewind and pause and watch things over.
Yeah. My closing statements would just have to be that if you have 3 hours
patience and watch a very strange but like intoxicating and movie that just like pulls you in. You may be bored as it pulls you in, but and it holds you, but it will still pull you in, and you will just be stuck there. So definitely Hard to Be a God. Check it out. You can find it on Blu-ray. I don't know how easily. Jamie, yeah, looks like he's about ready to say something.
Oh, I was looking it up on Can I Stream It. Honestly, it's not really anywhere else, but just buy it on Blu-ray.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to pay money for that Blu-ray.
But a whole bunch of people together and watch it. Make it worthwhile. Yeah.
And you can all sit around and maybe talk about how you hate it or like it.
Do it on a day off. Bring plenty of coffee. Take pee breaks. You're good to go.
Which is funny. I want to bring this up. There was a moment where Jamie left the room and we heard the door open and he went downstairs and I looked at John and I was like, I broke Jamie.
I thought Jamie's gone. He's going out of the pub.
He's gone. Like, he's out of this.
To be fair, the neighbor messaged me saying my back window was open and my trunk was open, so the dead hooker was showing up. Okay. I had to close it. It was just a window. But either way, I had to do it before I forgot because I wouldn't have not.
Thank God.
Yeah.
With the amount of hookers you kill.
Lord knows that.
Okay. On that note.
Thank you guys for listening. Tune in for this Thursday where we go over our topics. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Like us, subscribe, please. Jesus. We're on Facebook.
That's long.
We like talking to people, so you know, message us there.
Don't be afraid of us.
We've got a Kickstarter, we've got a Patreon.
No.
Follow us on Twitter. Kickster, no. Tinder.
Don't listen to what he's saying.
Plenty of Fish.
On Plenty of Fish and OkCupid.
Yep. His name's Red Pubes.
Red Pubes.
For we're the opening win. Up a store where we're going to sell t-shirts and hats. And
organic milk.
Not quite Hollywood organic milk. We try to extract the CGI out of the milk so you're not as disappointed.
I'm running for president.
Please.
NQH 2020.
God, how about now?
Okay,
before it's too late.
We're all gonna run together under the banner of Not Quite Hollywood.
Exactly.
We just want you listeners to know how big of a conglomerate we are. Mm-hmm. We're incorporated.
We're big in Japan.
I hope so. All right, have a good night.
Yep, later. Have a good one.